I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Midday. Revitalization without gentrification. A lot of syllables to describe an elusive goal. In urban neighborhoods, development too often means poor, usually minority residents are priced out. Cities have wrestled with this for decades. Now, a group of Baltimore housing advocates think they have the answer. They're asking the city to issue tens of millions of dollars in bonds in support of their plan. What's the big fix? Community land trusts, in which a neighborhood's residents decide how the land the trust controls will be used. The development model has been gaining steam in other cities, and as Baltimore tries to solve the problems highlighted in last year's unrest, advocates say community land trusts could be key. That's Midday after the news from NPR. Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm very glad you could join us today. We're talking today about how to solve a local paradox. Baltimore is a city with tens of thousands of vacant buildings and a real dearth of affordable housing. About a third of the city's residents were homeless or on the brink of homelessness at some point in 2014. The city has thrown a lot of solutions at this problem over the years. The Dollar House Program, Healthy Neighborhoods, Vacants to Value, just a few of the many attempts to address blight and create permanently affordable housing without pricing out longtime residents. Yet over the past few decades, rates of homelessness have only increased. What's to be done that hasn't been tried already? A group of Baltimore housing advocates think they have the answer, or at least a key piece of it. Community land trusts. These are nonprofit organizations meant to keep properties affordable and in the hands of the community. The trust puts the house, but not the land it occupies, on the market. Only low-income buyers may apply, and if a homeowner chooses to sell, there are restrictions on resale price. The house thus, at least in theory, remains permanently affordable and retains its public housing subsidy. The model can also be used for commercial spaces, rental housing, and gardens. Frederick County has a community land trust, at least three are in various stages of development in the city of Baltimore. But to get to scale, community land trusts usually need public financial support. So in January, a coalition of activist organizations calling themselves the Baltimore Housing Roundtable issued a report recommending a massive bond investment from the city. They're calling for $40 million in bonds every year to fund community land trusts and demolition of vacant houses. Two advocates of community land trust are here to discuss this approach. Matt Hill is a staff attorney for the Public Justice Center. He co-wrote the report I just mentioned. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you, Sheila. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. I'm very glad you could be here. Also here with us is Ann Sackey. Ann is a board member of Charm City Land Trust in East Baltimore. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much, Sheila.
Matt, $40 million is a tremendous amount of money. Why should the city put that much money into community land trusts rather than some other affordable housing model?
Well, just to be clear, it is a significant amount of money. We're calling for $20 million in general obligation bonds annually for vacant deconstruction and jobs, another $20 million to invest in permanently affordable community-driven housing through the community land trust model. There are 31,000 vacants in this city. That is a huge number. It is a significant driver of blight and all the other ills that we see in our neighborhoods. And as we've talked with residents around the city, we have to do something about this vacancy crisis. The recent money from Governor Hogan and the Project CORE is a good start. But there are a lot of concerns around that program in terms of whether or not this is really going to provide jobs for the people who need jobs the most in this city. That's the other big piece of the puzzle here. We want to see a significant bond. $20 million is what we proposed to deconstruct vacants and provide jobs. Particularly, there could be jobs for citizens coming back from incarceration. It's a great opportunity for those folks to be involved in kind of the deconstruction process, taking vacants apart brick by brick, recycling the materials that can be recycled, greening the vacant lots, creating the parks. We think that that's a key component of laying the groundwork to restore Baltimore's neighborhoods and provide jobs to its citizens.
Right, but as you mentioned, Governor Hogan has a proposal that funding for which is moving through the General Assembly. Most of it turns out is not new money that the governor is proposing. He was harnessing existing programs, but that's kind of my question. So there's some existing effort to demolish at least some of the vacants that in which nobody ever used the phrase community land trust, but you seem to think a community land trust is the important way to go. Why is that better than these other efforts that already are moving?
Sure. So the part of the $20 million, the money from Governor Hogan's great, but again, there are unanswered questions about how communities are going to be involved in that process and whether or not this is actually going to provide jobs to community residents who need the jobs the most. Second, the scale of the crisis that we're facing with 31,000 vacant properties is not going to be addressed solely by Governor Hogan's program. We really need to address that. The other $20 million bond that we're asking for is for community land trust to create the kind of permanently affordable housing that this city desperately needs in every neighborhood.
So if I'm understanding correctly, the answer to my question is, Sheila, we're not saying that this is better than other approaches. We're saying do it all. Do it both.
Yeah, we're not asking to take money away from a particular project or organization or an affordable housing fund. We need more money, more resources, and we think that this is the best way to invest those resources for many different reasons.
Okay, so that leads to my next question. It's a lot of money. Baltimore doesn't have a lot of money. Baltimore taxpayers don't have a lot of money. How realistic is it that you're going to get those kinds of resources?
Each year, the city borrows up to $65 million through issuing these general obligation bonds. Some of that money rightfully needs to go into the school renovation and revitalization project. But there's the bond money has been invested in prior years in many different types of development projects, many involving the Inner Harbor and downtown and other pet economic projects of the city. We're saying that it's time to take some of that money and really return it to the neighborhoods in a way that makes sense, that's going to, again, demolish, deconstruct vacants, provide jobs, and actually provide housing that's permanently affordable for the citizens who need it the most.
Ann Sackey, let me pull you into this conversation. You sit on the board of the Charm City Land Trust in East Baltimore. Why are you a believer in community land trusts?
I'm a believer in community land trusts because I see how it works in terms of transforming neighborhoods, I would say, and specifically in McElderry Park. When I think about transforming neighborhoods, I not only think about the vacants, which is one part of it, but I also think about the amount of dumping and trash and that sort of thing and the need to have green space. And that's really, for me, why with the Charm City Land Trust I got involved, because we own land in McElderry Park where we have created green spaces, some of the only green space that's actually in that particular neighborhood. And we have community gardens where the neighbors experience gardens, but also the neighbors and the children come out to maintain, to grow, first of all, to grow food, to also harvest that food, and to contribute to the area where we live, where I live. So I see the possibilities of it, just with the small tract of land that we have ownership of in terms of those green spaces and how we're utilizing it.
Let me push back a little bit, because as I understand it, Charm City Land Trust got its start 16 years ago.
About 2000 in terms of when we were created as a nonprofit, yes.
The year 2000.
Yes.
Okay. And as you mentioned, you've done a lot with green space, some recreation space, gardens, but you just acquired the first house.
That's correct.
So is this really a tool that could help lots of people in terms of housing?
We think so. But
why?
As you just mentioned, we're just acquired our first house. So we're expanding our portfolio because we recognize the need for more affordable housing in our neighborhood. It's interesting to me that, yes, there is development that is occurring, but it's occurring at more of a what I would call like a market rate approach, which is fine because certainly we do want to have a mixed income developed neighborhood. We do want to have a full community. However, when you think of McElderry Park and that the majority of the residents that are there are earning annually, I would say the households are about $29,000 a year. Their ability to be able to purchase their first home ends up being difficult for them. And so we see this land trust as a way of being able to help individuals to, in fact, purchase their first home because of the fact that it will be in trust for affordability. So it's another tool, another opportunity for people to be able to realize a dream.
That's Ann Sackey, a board member of East Baltimore's Charm City Land Trust, here on Midday on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also with me here in the studio is Matt Hill, staff attorney for the Public Justice Center. We'd love to know what you think, listeners, as you hear about this. Do you think this is a good idea? Is gentrification something you see as a big problem that's worth a big public investment? Send us an email at midday@wypr.org or call us 410-662-8780 is our number, 410-662-8780. Ann Sackey, land, the garden and other green space you've got, how did the Charm City Land Trust acquire that?
It's actually quite an interesting story in that the city had demolished several vacant homes on this particular block in East Baltimore.
This is on Port Street?
Port Street. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. As part of that, there was the demolishment of the properties, and it left the space that was just open, which, of course, could create dumping trash or whatever.
And it was space that the city owned?
Yes. And then as we acquired it through fundraising and other things, and I should also say
So you bought it from the city.
That's right. And so I would also say, though, that that there was a community process, a stakeholder process of what would we like to do in this community in terms of the space? What would help to bring about, if you will, more community use of this open space. And so with the residents and with other stakeholders, churches, schools, that sort of thing, as the community came together and offered suggestions, the first one was about having a community gardens and that sort of thing, because it is in a food desert in terms of McElderry Park being that.
So the idea is a place that could actually produce food.
To be able to produce food. But also, there's also the importance of being able to reduce blight, mm-hmm. Making land usable for the community to be able to use, and more importantly, having a say in how that was going to occur. And that's really the value of community land trust from my perspective, is that it's democratic, small d, in the sense of the governance of the community. So people are actually being held accountable in their neighborhoods for how it is that they want the development to occur.
On that note, we're going to take a short break here. We're going to talk about that and more when we come back. We're also going to talk about an email we got from someone who heard me say revitalization without gentrification, and writes to say that is how the system is designed to work. So you can join us after this short break with Ann Sackey, a board member of East Baltimore's Charm City Land Trust, and Matt Hill, staff attorney for the Public Justice Center. Send us an email at midday@wypr.org or phone us at 410-662-8780. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. Today we're talking about an approach to development and redevelopment aimed at keeping current residents of a neighborhood from being displaced when properties are redeveloped. It's called a community land trust. We're here with Matt Hill, housing advocate and staff attorney for the Public Justice Center, and Ann Sackey, board member of Charm City Land Trust and a resident of the McKeldry Park area in East Baltimore, where Charm City Land Trust runs several gardens. What do you think of this idea? Do you think it's something that public money should go into? Are you skeptical that it could actually produce what is hoped for here? Call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email to midday@wypr.org. We got an email from Monica. I'm not sure where Monica lives, but she wrote at some length, revitalization without gentrification is pointless and as a result will never happen. From the city's perspective, the purpose of revitalization is to increase the tax base for the city. From the property owner's perspective, the purpose of revitalization is to increase the amount they can charge for rent. The poor people who you wish to maintain in these residences cannot pay any more money or rent in property taxes. Therefore, revitalization will never happen where they live until they leave. Baltimore City needs to strategically gentrify neighborhoods to increase the tax base for the city so the additional revenue can be used to help poor populations in the rest of the city. And she concludes by saying, no money equals no progress. Matt Hill, how would you respond to that?
Well, I mean, I agree with Monica that that does seem to be the conventional wisdom, and that has been the conventional wisdom ever since we talk about government policies dating back to redlining, where we're excluding people from development and we're saying we can't handle actually helping people to be living in inclusive communities. We have to separate people. And that's why we are living, I think, today in two Baltimores. That's one is black and one is white. One is rich and one is poor. It's a very separate and unequal system. Continuing with those policies, to me, is the opposite of what our organization's about and the opposite of everything I've heard from residents and other advocates. We want to create more inclusive communities. So as Baltimore's developing, and that's the other thing I want to come back to, this idea that we don't invest any public money in development, that development is so needed at any cost in Baltimore, is just not entirely true. We see lots of development around Hopkins at UNI-BDI. It's coming soon to the Maryland Biopark Center. Port Covington, we talk about public investment, over $500 million in subsidy toward private, mostly luxury development. Canton Fells, Highland,
which is still being discussed. Which is still being discussed.
In a very non-transparent, unaccountable way, where the deal is going to be done before it even gets a hearing.
Do you see what you're calling for in terms of public investment, public financing for community land trusts through bonds, as in sort of direct competition to that kind of tax increment financing that Baltimore sees so much of with big developments?
We certainly hope not. I think, again, that's just one of the big unanswered questions of this Port Covington proposal is, will this kind of TIF impact Baltimore's bond rating? Will it impact Baltimore's ability to issue general obligation bonds and fund the other tremendous capital needs that we have as a city? And I think, again, because we haven't had the kind of transparency that we need in this process, we still don't have the answer to that question. But the idea that we don't have any development, any development's good development, it's just going to magically trickle down to the rest of the city is simply that's the way things have been going for the past 100 years or so. And, how's that working out for you?
I'd also like to address it, I think, from a different perspective, and that this is, I think, an important moment for Baltimore to look at being different in what it's doing. It's not so much that it's about gentrification. I'm not quite sure from the email what the definition of that would be for that particular person. But we don't see that, or certainly I don't see that, as being a bad thing. So this is not about gentrification. This is about fairer development in terms of community-driven development with accountability, where the neighborhoods have a say. Neighborhoods that traditionally, quite frankly, have been disinvested in. And so I would say that even with the so-called, however we're defining, the gentrified person that's moving in. The question becomes, well, are they moving into the neighborhoods that have been so disinvested in anyway? And I'm not sure that they are. So that would be one piece of it. But the other thing is we talk about the poor almost as if they are not a part of our community. And in fact, at least in the community where I live in, many of the people that are earning the $20,000 a year or the $30,000 a year, which is below the 30% AMI that drives a lot of the government
Every
subsidy.
Monthly income.
Yes. So we're talking even people that are earning less than the area median income. The fact is that they still are working people and they still have dreams. They still want to have a home. They still want to have upward mobility. And what a land trust does, it's another tool in the arsenal of the city, if you will, and certainly of the nonprofits and the other stakeholder institutions that are in those communities, such as John Hopkins, or even it might be a church that's in the neighborhood. But the point is that they too are working people and they should be able to have a home.
We're talking in this hour on Midday on WYPR about community land trusts. They're a tool aimed at creating permanently affordable housing. There is a community land trust in Frederick. Do you live near it? How do you think it's working? Call us. Send us an email at midday@wypr.org or call us at 410-662-8780. We have a call from Don in Annapolis. Don, welcome to Midday.
Hi, Sheila. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And I'm very glad your guest brought up Port Covington, because I have a question that goes towards bonds, whether they're issued for the construction or development of Port Covington or for, as your guests say, these projects in Baltimore. What I want to know is if there is a default by either Port Covington developers or by the city of Baltimore, is the ultimate bill going to end up here in Annapolis for the people of Maryland to pay? Because as the mayor of Baltimore has said, I think this year to the governor, that Baltimore needs more resources. And I'll hang up and listen.
Don, I appreciate the call. I'm going to turn to the lawyer in the room.
The lawyer who's not an expert on TIF bonds, there are many different types of bonds. I don't know the exact answer. I don't believe, from what I understand about TIFs, that Maryland has anything to do with...
I understood Don to be asking about the bonds that you're proposing.
General obligation bonds.
But let's focus particularly on what you're proposing, the $20 million that you're proposing for community land trust funding. Could that turn out to be an obligation on the whole state as opposed to just the taxpayers of the city?
No, I don't believe so. These are general obligation bonds issued by the city, and the city is then on the hook to repay those bonds.
Don, thank you for the call. Harvey is calling us from Baltimore. Harvey, welcome to Midday.
Hi. You know, Baltimore is one of the most affordable cities, if not the most, on the East Coast. And we have, I don't know, 18,000 vacant houses. I mean, if anybody has any get up and go, they can get these houses for, you know, back taxes or for nothing, really, and fix them up.
Harvey, I appreciate your raising that because I think a lot of listeners may be thinking that. And what do you say to that, Matt Hill? That do we really need this tool to make it happen?
So first, this is just one tool of many that can be used to deconstruct vacants, to demolish vacants, and to rebuild communities. And as Anne was saying, we like the tool because it is a democratic neighborhood-driven process to meet the needs of the neighborhood. So certainly we're not opposed to other means of development. I think that I want to push back, though, on the idea that Baltimore is already such an affordable city in that it's not affordable to the people who actually live here. As you started off the program, one-third of the city residents are homeless or near homelessness. They're threatened with eviction, and I see it every day in my office with clients who simply cannot afford the rent and are getting no help at all, and they need affordable housing. So we believe this is one way to, as Ann said, in neighborhoods even that aren't facing any sort of gentrification, to really jumpstart development in those neighborhoods that's fair and equitable and that's going to include folks who can't afford their rents currently, even in those neighborhoods.
Ann Sackey, do you – I mean, the concept of community land trust is a little bit complex. Do you find working in the community that your neighbors get it right away?
No.
How do you,
quite honestly, which
it?
Is part – well, I try and educate and make them more aware, and I listen to what their concerns are. And initially, of course, the first concern is just the whole shared equity concept of the land trust, which certainly means that, you know, when it comes to the equity, when you do decide or if you do decide that you are going to sell your home, you're going to move someplace else or whatever that might be, you have to share that equity in terms of the cost. Because when we being the land trust, who own the land, when we do that, we basically reduce the cost of the housing. We're taking over that part of it while you, in fact, have the mortgage on the house. So, in fact, so let's just say that it might be $10,000. And therefore, the house, therefore, might, instead of costing you $100,000 to purchase in terms of your getting a mortgage, we've already invested $10,000 in that. So, in fact, the house ends up being $90,000.
And
so
let
that's
me make
the
sure
shared
understand.
Equity
Let
part
me make
of
sure
it.
I understand. When you say we've already invested $10,000 in that, is that you're
because
talking about
the land? Because we own the land.
Because that's the land.
That's right.
Okay.
That because we own the land. And so you get your you're able to get your mortgage. We at a, let's just say, a lesser cost. It's less market rate per se. And then you end up owning that property. But when you sell it, let's just say that the property is now worth $120,000 when you go to sell. Well, we have $10,000 in that plus whatever the appraised value might be. So there is a shared equity in terms of what we maintain as the land trust in terms of what you're able to sell the property for.
And let me follow up on that, Matt Hill. So somebody sells a house that, and there's, let's say there's been some appreciation, but they don't get as much as somebody outside the land trust would get for in that same market. They end up with, they end up making less on the deal than people tend to expect in a given market to make on a house. So they're financially not that much better off. So how are they ever going to be able to afford a market rate house?
Well, let me challenge the notion that they're not much better off. And first say that, you know, traditional homeowner incentive programs in this country are failing. About 50% of all first-time low-income home buyers actually revert to rental within 5 years. By contrast, nearly 90% of first-time community land trust homeowners stayed in homeownership after 5 years. Either
this is the experience in community land trust elsewhere in the
around country. The country, yes. And that's another misconception we should come back to, which is there are over 250 land trusts currently active in this country.
That's right.
In Philadelphia, Cleveland, Chicago, Boston, very successful.
Frederick,
Maryland, exactly. And so this is not a new concept. But it is a concept that's starting to take off and have real legs because folks are grappling with these really important issues. Coming back to your question about how homeowners are better off, they are better off because, A, they're paying down a mortgage. They're building equity by paying down the principal on that mortgage. And, B, as Ann said, they're going to get a share of the appreciation. They're going to get maybe 25%. 50% of the appreciation. It depends on what the community,
what the formula is. The land trust.
And but go ahead.
I was just going to say that this, it's not a tool for everyone, but it is a tool that will work for some who want to have shared equity and to begin to build into this process.
And as a Baltimore City taxpayer, it's really important that if we're going to put $20,000-$30,000 into a house through this bond money, we should keep that money in the neighborhood. And so in a traditional homeownership incentive program, that $20,000, $30,000 is just lost when the homeowner resells it. It's pocketed like a lottery ticket. We want to keep that $20,000 in the property, keep the property affordable, and keep that public subsidy in its best use.
We have a call from James in Baltimore. James, welcome to Midday.
Good afternoon, Sheila and your guests. A lot of citizens are unaware that Baltimore City seems to find money for things like lawsuits and settlements and stuff like that, and you're asking for a bond. Initially, when Baltimore City implemented a telecommunications tax years ago on landlines, $4 per landline and $4 per cell phone line, the first year they made $24 million in 1 year that went into the general funds of Baltimore City. So Baltimore City has money that doesn't even need to be put up for bond to give to people like this, these organizations, to implement these types of services and programs to provide for home ownership and green space and things like that. So when you talk about bonds, bonds aren't really necessary because the money is there and we are putting it in there because we're getting taxed to death with communications tax and property tax out the wazoo and this kind of stuff. So you guys are begging for bonds when the money is there in Baltimore City government, period.
James, I appreciate the call. What would either of you say to James, who says you don't have to go through the bond issue part of this, the money's lying around?
Well, first of all, I appreciate what it is that he says, but I would also say that there is pushback in terms of the money being there when we go to ask for it. So one of the ways of thinking about it is, well, let's look at the bond perspective. The city has a good bond rating. I'm certainly very grateful for that, which says that the city is doing a lot of things that are right. The only thing that I'm saying about this is in terms of your $68 million that you get a year, understanding that maybe $17, $18 million is going to schools, and that's all great, that for the remainder of it, here's an idea that the city that the residents of Baltimore can think about in terms of the vacants, not just vacants that we currently have, but vacants that apparently are increasing a bit, at least through the latest data that that I researched, and a way by which you can look at those neighborhoods that have been disinvested in, probably would not be invested in terms of housing, for which you have people that we I think should not be displaced. And this is a way by which to be able to do that.
Matt Hill, what happens if a homeowner defaults on her mortgage?
In the community land trust model?
In the community land trust.
Well, so the normally, and that's what's great about this model too, and that's why I think it actually is more successful at keeping folks in home ownership and moving them to home ownership than the traditional model. It's because the community land trust is still there as a partner for the homeowner. So, for instance, under these ground leases, let's say the community land trust homeowner's paying maybe $20 a month in rent to the community land trust.
For the ground.
For the ground.
For the land.
For the land. And let's say they lose their job. The first folks who are going to find out about that from a nonprofit perspective that's able to help is the community land trust, because guess what? That $20 payment isn't going to be there the next month. That's something that the homeowner probably thinks they can get away with not being able to pay that month. It alerts the community land trust so that they can be a partner to help get that homeowner back on his or her feet and support them in either getting a refinance or a forbearance or some other means to get back into the workforce. And I think that's one of the kind of supportive mechanisms of the community land trust.
Okay, we need to take another short break here. When we come back, more on an affordable housing tool known as a community land trust. Matt Hill recently co-authored a report by the Baltimore Housing Roundtable about community land trusts. Ann Sackey is also a member of that roundtable and sits on the board of East Baltimore's Charm City Land Trust. Should cities like Baltimore invest in community land trusts, or is it better for the city to court developers who have lots of money, court them through tax breaks and other incentives? You can send us an email, midday@wypr.org, or you can phone us, 410-662-8780. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking in this hour about a development tool called a community land trust. These are nonprofit organizations that aim to create affordable housing by leaving the land a house sits on in the hands of the community. I'm speaking with Ann Sackey, a board member of Charm City Land Trust in Baltimore's McKeldry Park neighborhood, and Matt Hill, staff attorney for the Public Justice Center. Are you skeptical about community center development models like community land trusts? If so, you can let us know. You can call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. We've gotten a couple of emailers who want to continue the conversation that Monica started. Monica was the one who asserted that gentrification is actually a good thing for the city, or that seemed to me to be the import of what she was saying. Stephanie writes us to say she disagrees with Monica. Ownership is obtainable for people with modest income in Baltimore. I bought and rehabbed a foreclosure. It was a deal. There's plenty of housing in Baltimore. It just takes some effort. And then Denise emailed us to take issue with something I believe that you said, Matt. She says, I don't think it's accurate to say there are two Baltimores, one white and rich and one black and poor. There are certainly many communities of poor white families and middle and upper class families who are black. This is not to discount that there is a problem that needs to be addressed, but to say that it's not as simple as your guest states. Do you want to respond to that?
I don't think I said that it's only about rich white people versus poor black people. I did say, though, that there is a clear pattern of hypersegregation in this city that divides white and black, and that there's significant income concentrations of poor and rich. So I think that it is, and I think we've got to come back to the fact that, you know, folks are a little nervous about using public policy, about using new tools to try to bridge that gap and create a more inclusive communities. But we have to recognize, again, that public policies have what created the situation that we're in to begin with. It's public policies, again, dating back to Baltimore was a pioneer
in redlining,
in segregation, in putting all public housing in black neighborhoods. And so if we're going to blame public policy, we need to understand that public policy is what got us here, and we need to use new tools and new investments in public policy to get us out.
Let's talk to Monroe in Baltimore. Monroe, welcome to Midday.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just wondering, all these houses that are abandoned, Baltimore City should have a record of who is the owner of these houses and go after them legally, freeze all their assets, and then take them to court and sue them, where they would pay for the destruction, rehabilitation, or the building of new houses on those properties. Absentee landlords have been a problem for at least 50 or so years, and apparently Baltimore City has done nothing about getting the landlords.
Monroe, I appreciate your raising it. I know enough to know it's ownership of these properties is very complicated. Do either of you want to address Monroe's point that we could solve this problem by going after owners of vacants?
Well, one of the things that I would say about that, and actually that I admire about the current program in terms of vacants to value, is the fact that it is about enforcement. Now, there are other issues that we could talk about in terms of how I feel, but I do think that Baltimore is trying through its enforcement efforts to do a better job with that. And when I say that, I'm talking about the city itself. That's really about.
Peter is calling us from Baltimore with a point with a comment on something we just said. Peter, welcome to the show.
Thank you. A previous caller suggested maybe the Baltimore vacant housing stock and inventory needs no more than to be fixed up. But as having been a carpenter by trade and volunteered in some of the Habitat work weeks, from what I can see, a lot of the inner city housing is basically functionally obsolete and really does need a massive investment program that includes demolition and rebuilding. That's about all I had to say, so I'll just listen off the air.
Peter, I appreciate your making that point, and I see heads nodding here.
So we definitely agree that a large chunk of the vacant housing just needs to be demolished. And, you know, in its place, you can have, again, gardens, commercial development, new housing. We like the community land trust model, I think, because it provides some real neighborhood participation and control over that process of demolition and redevelopment. And I just want to go back to the previous point about the number of vacant housing and what the city should do. You should have on Jason Hessler from Baltimore Department of Housing and Community Development. He can tell you all about the efforts that the city's taken right now to enforce the law and hold landlords accountable. It is very difficult because of the complex structures that own these properties. But the city does have some tools through the tax sale foreclosure process, through receivership for properties that don't meet code. And part of what our report talks about is that these tools could be expanded. Again, the city could take some of that $20 million to really invest in those kinds of tools that could take title to these vacant properties, clear any liens, and then transfer them on an even greater scale than they already do, we would think, with a preference toward neighborhood-based development organizations, and have some sort of affordability requirement when they do that transfer so that's in the public interest.
Ann Sackey, the house, the single house that the Charm City Land Trust now has, how did you get it? You talked about you raised money to buy the land that you've used for green space and recreation.
To buy, and also grants in terms of foundations and that sort of thing terms of acquiring the community gardens, the
but
land,
the house,
that sort
how
of thing. But that came through an initiative with Wells Fargo Bank. That was the way in which we acquired that property.
This was a house that they had, that Wells Fargo had foreclosed on.
That's right.
And instead of trying to sell it, well, they sold it to you for a dollar.
Right. And so we were able to acquire it that way. And it's an initiative that they have. So we're not the only nonprofit through which they received a property by which to be able to develop. But if I could just go back one moment to the other caller who spoke about the ability to be able to rehabilitate property. Let's also be clear about how much it costs to rehabilitate property in the sense of different types of financing that's needed. So the ability to be able to have construction funding is critically important to be able to rehab a property, which is different from being able to get a mortgage on a property. And we have found that is just a truly bad situation here in terms of traditional lenders, at least, being unwilling to be able to invest in the neighborhoods that we're in for that construction funding. So if you're talking about anywhere from $125,000 to, let's just say, $150,000 that it might take to rehab a property.
Is that a fair number to describe what you think you're going to have to invest in the house that you have?
I think we're going to at least $125,000 to $150,000 to rehab our property. That's just on the construction side of it, yes.
And you're saying it's hard to get that financing.
It's hard to get that type of funding to be able to do that. And so that's what we're working on now.
What do you hope to sell that house for?
I'm not quite sure yet, actually. But I'd love to come back and talk to you about it when we, in fact, have our first homeowner.
And the idea is that that money then would be reinvested in other properties?
It would be. But the other idea is that, of course, we are hoping to have our first homeowner, first new home buyer. And we're also hoping to have a formula that's going to work for Charm City Land Trust and other land trusts in the city that are emerging.
We got an email from someone who identifies himself or herself as T. I'm not sure where T lives, and I'm not sure I fully understand this point, but let me share it with you. Can you discuss the real problem that there is a generation of undereducated people who will inherit or move into these properties and as a result will not be able to take care of them or don't care to take care of them, and many investors don't see it as a place where they want to put their money? What goes through your mind when you hear that?
To me, I completely agree that there's neighborhoods in Baltimore, many that just have a cycle of blight going on, that poverty and blight combine to create a vicious cycle where more and more properties become vacant, where people don't see a need or a return to actually do investment in their neighborhood. So how do we reverse that cycle? How do we really jumpstart neighborhoods to take control of the development process and then bring in other private capital as well? And again, I keep coming back to it. That's the beauty of the community land trust. It provides that kind of democratic institution on the neighborhood level to help bring capital back into the neighborhood and do the kind of planning for, you know, education, for transportation, for parks, whatever the neighborhood needs, that community land trust can be a vehicle to do that kind of planning and development.
Gordon has raised a question. Gordon is calling us from Baltimore. Welcome to Midday.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, we're tight on time, so if you can make your point quickly.
Okay, two questions. First is, I'm pastor of a church up in Harford County, and our church does not own the land that we are on. It's called a land reversion clause or trust. And this has been a huge problem for us because we can't borrow money against our building or anything to do improvements. So in this model, can people who participate in it borrow money against their home to do capital improvement projects? The second question is elderly person, you know, a lot of elderly people take a reverse mortgage in their old age
so it's
they
the same,
can survive.
It's the same kind of question. Does the owner of this of a home in a community land trust have something they can borrow against? Gordon, thank you. Can I get a quick answer from either of you on that point?
Yes.
Yes, they can.
Yes, they can.
They because they own
the building,
and that is an
property.
Asset against
that's right.
Against which they can borrow. What is and the.
I just want to say one point that has been raised, I just want to make clear, is that community land trusts around the country also do a lot of rental housing, so that the community land trust owns the house, owns the land, and can then rent the property at a rate that's affordable, particularly for those folks who can't go into home ownership for whatever reason or that want to rent the property. But again, it's keeping the public subsidy, it's keeping the neighborhood in control, and we think that's a very important use of a community land trust that just hasn't been brought up yet.
We have just a couple of minutes left, and I want to get back to this, I guess it's really a question of scale. The Baltimore Housing Roundtable report that you co-wrote, Matt, criticizes trickle-down development using public subsidies to attract private investors. But big changes require big money. Can community land trusts really find the kind of funding they would need to transform inner-city neighborhoods?
Well, I think that's why we've come together as the Baltimore Housing Roundtable. I mean, Charm City Land Trust alone is not going to be able to do this. There's a land trust up in northeast Baltimore called the Northeast Housing Initiative, doing some amazing work, really doing the grassroots organizing. But without some resources, some dedicated public resources, they're not going to be able to do it alone. So let's bring everyone together. Let's sit down at the table. Let's figure out how we can do this and leverage some significant public resources to really redevelop our communities.
What kind of reaction are you getting during this campaign for mayor and city council? Is this an idea that is reverberating in community forums?
Yes. We've spoken to several of the candidates, both in terms of on the city council level, but also the mayoral candidates. And there's traction. There was actually a recent report, a survey that was put out, I think, by the University of Baltimore, where all of the candidates were in favor of the community land trust. And the reason is because it is a tool that builds on existing things that are occurring, but it looks at it in a way that is new and different. It provides hope for people who are below AMI in terms of the 30%. That's right. But who can still invest in their communities and still work for their neighborhoods.
I want to give the last 30 seconds to you, Matt.
And if you want to know more, they should come to a community development forum that's being moderated by you, Sheila, this Saturday, 9:30 at St. James and John's Church on Charles Street, in which community mayoral candidates will talk all about housing and community development. We think it's really exciting and looking forward to it.
Lots of questions to address. We will link to some of this information on the Midday page at WYPR.org. I want to thank you, Matt Hill, staff attorney for the Public Justice Center. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
And Ann Sackey, board member of the Charm City Land Trust in McElderry Park. Thank you
for having me, Sheila.
Also, want to thank Eddie's at Roland Park for providing lunch for our guests today. Eddie's is a full-service market with locations on North Charles Street and on Roland Avenue in Roland Park. Their deli features unique sandwiches and salads, specials each day, all listed on their website, eddiesofrolandpark.com. And thank you for listening. I hope you'll tune in tomorrow. How did African Americans separated by slavery find each other after the Civil War? We'll hear stories of loss and reunion. That's tomorrow. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned now for Here and Now.